And welcome to Thrift Shop Biography. This is the one about Sharon Osborne. Thank you for listening.
Hello.
Hi. What have we been reading?
We've been reading the autobiography, the first autobiography of Sharon Osborne.
Yes, okay. So what did you think of her before you read this book?
I thought she was a mean old bag.
I happen to know that you hated her. And I said, oh, really? I have no opinion on her whatsoever.
That's where we both. How can you not have an opinion on such a divisive old crone?
Because I never watched The Voice or anything like that.
She's not on The Voice.
What's she on? X Factor. Yeah. I don't watch it because I don't like the whole judging back and forth. I've seen a couple of episodes of the Osbournes back in the day, and Ozzy Osbourne's bloody hilarious. But yeah, so I don't really have an opinion. I could tell you one thing I knew about her before. I lived in Birmingham, and the people I shared a house with used to work selling merchandise at the arena in Birmingham. And I remember one night they came back and Black Sabbath had been on, or Ozzy Osbourne, I can't remember which, and them saying, oh, yeah, there was this woman going round. She was going to every single merchandise booth, counting the T-shirts, counting the takings, writing everything down obsessively. And they just didn't even know who she was. They were like, is she with the company? Is she with the... And then they found out it was Ozzy's wife.
Wow.
That was when no one had ever heard of her. And they came back and said that. So I've always thought, wow, Ozzy's wife is this real hardcore businesswoman.
Yeah.
That's... I didn't know the half of it.
That's amazing. That shows you...
That's how hands-on she was.
And that's the kind of person who does become massively successful.
And make your husband remain at the top of their game. Yeah. When they should be in a ditch somewhere.
Yeah, right. No, but my main gripe with her is being on those shows, talent shows. I just don't think people who are massively successful at the top of the entertainment industry should be being really mean to people at the bottom.
Well, I don't like that. That's why I don't watch it.
Yeah, and but she has perpetuated that for years, and I don't think it's on. And also, you know what? She's been really mean about Danny Minogue.
Really?
And it's always really bothered me. Yeah. Yeah, if you read Danny Minogue's autobiography.
No.
Sharon Osbourne is a massive... bitch.
Okay, well, that doesn't surprise me, but I didn't know that. I'm reading this book. I don't believe she isn't, though. I've just gone into this underworld of, like, mafia crooks and violent gangsters that are the people behind the music scene. And we're always reading these books about the actual musicians and always known they're getting ripped off, and these people are total crooks and absolute bastards. And basically, she... is writing about that side of it. It's the first time we've properly read it from that side.
Can I
She's
just say...
She's not hiding it.
No, let me just say, everything I've just said about her, totally fascinated by her.
Oh.
I loved this book.
This book is insane.
Like,
it doesn't
almost read
dispel
it
in... your opinion at all, though.
Yeah.
Not at all.
I also think
She's
there's something
hard.
Weirdly likeable about her. It's that weird thing where she behaves disgracefully, but it's also kind of funny.
Oh, my God. I have to say, it's too much for me. Her behaviour, it's too much.
It's too much because it's a woman.
No, it would be if it was a man.
Really?
I don't condone violence.
Oh,
for
okay.
Example.
Yeah, all right, we're talking about that.
She's horrendously violent and she's grown up with violence. Like, well, let's
story. Let's start at the beginning. So, when was she born?
She was born in 1953 in Brixton, London.
I love her description of Brixton.
I know, it's cool.
She was totally surrounded by all the vaudeville.
Yeah, it's another place that's really changed.
So was vaudeville still a thing in the 50s?
Well, I mean, it wasn't. Well, probably musical was still on, and then just theatre.
Variety shows.
Yeah, but probably just plays and stuff.
She said that when she grew up in the 50s, the Brixton Empress and the Camberwell Palace were less than a mile away. So they're the real old school theatres, right?
Yeah. It was the end of an era of the scene that was just still hanging about, plus all the old vaudeville stars.
And but then, she said her whole street had the comedians and ventriloquists and acrobats all lived around.
And that was her dad's history. So her dad came from a really strict Jewish family. And he went into show business against their will. Partly he failed because he viciously beat, in fact, kicked the shit out of, is actually what she said, of the stage manager in a show he was doing and kicked him into the orchestra pit. He was obviously extremely injured, enough that the Moss Empire venues banned her dad for 2 years from any of their venues, and they had all the venues. He's a really violent, nasty piece of
shit. Yeah, he really is. And he never redeems himself.
No. He's like a gangster.
But he really fancied himself as a gangster because she said that he always behaved like one. And then when he watched the Godfather film, he just became the Godfather. Yeah, he just sounds like a terrible violent. He was behaving like a gangster.
Yeah, he really was.
In the world of entertainment.
In the East End. Well, not the East End, the south of London, but in London. And then if he couldn't perform, he still wanted to be in showbiz. So he started putting acts together.
Yeah.
Managing and getting a whole show together, have a bit of a ventriloquist here and you there and that singing there, put the show together and then took them on tours.
Yeah, around all the independent theatres.
Yeah.
That's very entrepreneurial, I have to say, for especially because she says her dad had no formal education.
No.
But he obviously had something about him, and I know he backed that up with bluster and violence. But at the same time, you have to be good to be able to even pull all those people together and get it on the road.
Yeah, and he had a good ear for performance. I mean, he fell in love. Oh, we should mention that her mum was a dancer.
Yeah.
So it was a real showbiz family, and her mum's mum was a dancer, but she was a really nasty woman.
Yeah.
So there's a combination of theatrics
and
nastiness. That's her background.
Can I just say that, like, on the second page of this book, Sharon Osbourne really sets a tone, like, you're under no illusions of the way this book is going, where she talks about her grandmother. I was so shocked.
My God.
So she's got two grannies, and one of them's really lovely. She says, being with Nana made me feel warm and safe. She was motherly. The other Nana, she was incredibly ugly and had the biggest nose I have ever seen. She frightened me and she stank of her fanny and B.O. It's like, you can't say that about your grandmother. Yeah. I think it's safe to say we've never read a book where somebody said that about their granny. I probably think we're never going to read one in the future.
No,
it's so
it's amazing
awful.
That she's essentially a household name and she's unbelievably outspoken. She has no barriers.
It is comical, I have to say, as much as I disliked her beginning to read this book, when she says things about other people in the music industry, like he doesn't have a musical note up his arse and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so funny.
It is funny language. Yeah, it is funny. Anyway, yeah, she had an older brother,
David,
and that's about it, really.
So in 1960, she says that her father experienced the nearest thing he would get to a religious conversion, and that was the birth of rock and roll. So Gene Vincent was over here doing a concert, and it blew her dad away to the point where he actually then dropped everything he was doing, got Gene Vincent on board and did a tour for him where he was topping the bill. And then within a year, she says it was just a roller coaster. He then was managing Brenda Lee, Connie Francis, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis. I mean, that is
bringing them all to the UK.
Yes.
It's him who did that. By the way, he was born Harry Levy and he changed his name to Don Arden.
Yeah.
And he's very well known. I mean, she says, you know, he at some point was the top music producer in Britain. Yeah, and Sam Cooke and Bill Haley. She's got memories of being woken up to go to the station to wave off some.
Oh, she says Sam Cooke was, like, lovely, right? I bet he was, actually.
She really does say who was lovely and who were nasty. I mean, the Rolling Stones don't sound very nice.
No, she says she was intimidated by them. But then she was 12. I mean,
yeah, I know, but why intimidate a 12-year-old? It's not very nice, is it?
No, perhaps they're just all assholes.
But some definitely aren't. Some were lovely.
Yeah. That is amazing, actually, to be that close to rock and roll.
Yeah, it makes sense that she ended up in that business because she's not intimidated by anyone being famous. In fact, there's a point where she's like, you have no idea before you were even born the people I was hanging out with. It's true. I mean, it's just normal to her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by 1964, when she was 11, she got sent to Italia Conti.
Yeah, how long has Italia Conti been around? That's a stage school, by the way.
It's a stage school in London. Didn't some of the Spice Girls go there?
Oh, everybody went there.
But anyway, she got sent there at age 11. Her brother was already there. As soon as she signed up there, they moved to Mayfair, which is the bloody other side of London. So suddenly she's got a real trek to get there. And she couldn't really be bothered. She thought she wanted to be a dancer, and even by 11 she realised she probably wasn't.
Okay.
You have to be really dedicated, and she wasn't really that bothered.
That's because her mum and her granny were dancers.
I guess they train you as an actor as well there, though, don't they?
Oh, she said that Zeffirelli came to audition for Juliet and Romeo and Juliet, and Olivia Hussey was a classmate, and she got the part. Everybody was so excited to go to this audition. Sharon Osbourne was just like, oh, I just thought it was a nice way to get half a day off school.
Yeah.
So actually that shows you how much she was interested in becoming.
And they were asking her things in the audition like, oh, I see one of your interests is reading. what do you read? Porn. They were like, next. She just didn't even care. Yeah. She just did not care. She still doesn't.
No, you know, so the girl definitely became the woman she is, right?
Oh, yeah, bloody hell.
But with a dad like that.
Yeah, that's how you learn to speak. It's how you learn to think.
But also her mum, let's not let her mum off the hook. I know her mum had a lot to put up with. But she wasn't terribly nice either, was she?
No, I don't think she was. Her mum was already probably a bit of an arsehole. And then they had a massive car crash in the days before seatbelts. And her mum was in the back seat. And it says that her forehead hit the seat in front, which had a little hook to put your bag on or whatever. And the hook wedged into her forehead. And it was like loads of surgery. And she was in hospital for weeks. And she was never the same again.
Oh,
she went really quiet.
Awful. That's not nice, is it?
It's not nice. Right, here's where... This is actually the best bit in this whole book.
What?
Her dad, because her dad was the one who brought in all those Americans. John Lennon heard about this,
yes,
and he loved the Americans. So they said, he must be the man to manage us, the Beatles, my little band. So John Lennon approached Don Arden, please, could you be our manager? He said, no, because I'm not interested in you little British bands. I'm only interested in the Americans.
Yeah, he said an English rock and roll band.
It's going nowhere. It's all about the Americans right now.
Wow.
And like Blink and Beatlemania kicked off and actually the Americans then dropped away.
Knowing what Don Arden, Sharon's dad, is like, she doesn't say it in this book, but I bet turning down the Beatles stuck in his craw for the rest of his life.
Well, it would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's gonna hurt.
I'm glad, because he's a piece
didn't
of work.
It.
Yeah, no, he didn't.
He really is a piece of
and
work.
And who knows, actually, he was a good manager, but if the Beatles had gone with him, he would have made different choices and they might not have even happened.
They might have never got paid for a start. Seriously.
Yeah, it's true.
Bloody hell.
I'm so shocked. This book did, like you said, just completely confirms the music industry is set up to rip off artists.
They are actual gangster crooks.
Yeah.
They rip each other off as well. They're just really horrible, horrible people. They really are. Yeah. Anyway, then, he got more people. He got Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, the Everly Brothers.
Oh, she said the Everly Brothers were nice, which
I liked. It's nice to know. And then he had a hit with the Animals, who weren't called the Animals, but they had the hit with the House of the Rising Sun and renamed themselves. So that started making him some money. But he makes money, then he spends it. Like that move to Mayfair was only for show, so you could say, I'll come to our Mayfair address rather than Brixton. But they couldn't afford it, so the electricity be off and the car's towed. The next week, the Animals have a hit, so the car's back and it's just constantly living on a knife edge, isn't it?
One of his business practices that he used a lot was putting everything in his wife's name.
Yeah.
She signed for everything.
Right from the start, he never put anything
in his
own name.
Basically, Sharon's mum has a whole history of bankrupt companies her dad doesn't.
Yeah. He was no fool. And then obviously, as soon as he could, he started putting it in her name. I bet there's a lot in her brother's name as well.
Yeah.
Nothing in his.
Wow.
Gangster.
This
is a repeated story. So they had a family friend called Peter Grant. A family friend they trust, picks them up from school, has dinner with them, part of the family, also works in the business, and then betrays them. That's a constant, isn't it?
Yeah.
This particular bloke, Peter Grant, they'd gone on tour with the Animals to America. Don had come home and he'd stayed out there and shot them to a different management in America. Mm-hmm. And whenever this happens, he's so livid, Don. He's going, fucking kill him. And he's literally waving a gun around.
She says that he never once called the lawyers or the police. He just sent the heavies around people over.
Oh, yeah. She also says it was absolutely normal to hear people around the house going, well, I put a bullet in his head. Oh, no, I put a bullet between his eyes. It was just normal talk to hear people boasting about killing each other.
I mean, she says her dad grew up on the streets and he was a fighter and it's all he knew. But she is the way
because of
him.
Absolutely.
Because she hits and beats people up.
There's so much violence she does that she talks about in this book. And she left school at 15 with absolutely zero qualifications, nothing.
It also makes you wonder if her dad left with no qualifications and he's doing all right for himself. There's probably not an importance
no motivation.
On it.
And you know you can get a job in the family firm.
Which she does.
Yeah, she does. Her brother's already working there. And she trains up in a career of bullshit and lies. That's a direct quote.
She's very good at it.
Yeah, she's very good at it. It's always like phoning the bank and going, oh, no, it's coming. We've got the money. We'll get it to you in 3 days. All of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, no, my dad's away at the moment. He's in America on tour. He'll be back at the end of next week. You know, it's all of that.
Yeah, she's totally fending off the bailiffs and stuff regularly.
Yeah.
So she's working for her dad. She's about 16, 19, 17.
Yeah.
And that's the first time a certain band called Black Sabbath come onto her radar. With a lead singer called
Ozzy Osbourne.
She says the singer, she thought the whole band were weird, said the singer was the strangest of them all. Although it was winter, he was wearing open sandals. For a shirt, he had a pyjama top. And on a string round his neck was a tap. So they came to her dad because they were fed up with their manager and they wanted management.
Yeah, they went to see him at the Marquee and she said it absolutely blew her mind. She describes the band. She really loves the music.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good start, isn't it?
And she kind of says they were the first band who were really doing that version of heavy metal.
Well,
rock.
I knew that because
did
if you spend any time in Birmingham, you will learn that.
Oh, OK.
They invented it, and it was the sound of the factories, of the industry. That's why it's called metal. Like, they actually invented heavy metal, and it was like, he was really into horror films, Ozzy, and they were really industrial working class, that part of Birmingham. And so they sort of mixed the two things, the horror and the metal and the factories, and they wanted to capture the sound that was sort of incorporated all that. And they totally invented that music.
Wow.
It comes from them. Pretty cool.
So the thing that happens here, they ask Don Arden to be their manager. 16-year-old Sharon is sat in the office. We haven't mentioned them yet, but Don obviously has other staff, one of which is called Patrick Meehan.
Mm, another real friend of the family that's become part of their lives.
Then, before they knew it, before they'd even had time to agree to manage them, Meehan had jumped ship.
Oh, yeah, because the dad said, look, take him to the pub. Give him a bit of a talk because we really, really want to sign them. So you take him to the pub and get him all on our side. So he takes him to the pub and signs him himself and leaves and becomes their manager.
Yeah.
That's the sort of betrayal that happens.
It's cutthroat.
Yeah. And then him and his son end up managing them for the next 8 years.
Yeah.
And absolutely steal everything they earn for the next 8 years. They pay them between 200 and 300 quid a week and take everything else.
What I was really shocked about, how these people managed Black Sabbath, they became massive. We're talking huge amounts of money.
Yeah.
So they're giving the band their pittance money and then probably saying to them, we're investing the rest for you. They would buy them houses. So Ozzy's mum and dad were bought a house with Black Sabbath money.
All of those band members had houses bought for their parents.
And then when they left that management, Ozzy Osbourne's mum and dad were kicked out of their house by those managers.
All of those band members owned the houses. Parents got kicked out of their houses because they were duped into believing they'd made those purchases and they had not.
Wow.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. Oh, it's so corrupt.
It is brutal.
It's shameless.
Yeah. It's robbery. It's
actually
criminal.
Being ripped off. Yeah. So Ozzy wasn't her first boyfriend, was he?
No, that happened quite a bit later. A good 5 years later.
Yeah, because of course they went off with the other management. So she didn't.
Yeah, she didn't really see him again for 5 years. So yeah, she had her first boyfriend was 8, because she was quite a big girl. And she, especially if you've been brought up in that dance environment and all the showbiz people, she was really self-conscious about it and she felt really unattractive. So she really didn't have much of a social life. She was very much dedicated to her work and she had this one boyfriend who really didn't treat her very well for 5 years, the 5 years she was with him.
Adrian. She was with him a long time, yeah.
Williams. I think very early on when she was quite young, probably about 16, 17, she got pregnant and they definitely forced her to have an abortion and she describes that in detail.
Yeah.
It's absolutely terrible.
She said that her mum, she went back to her house where she still lived with her mum after having an abortion. Her mum knew all about it and she said her mum never once came into the room to see if she
was
all
right. Came into the room. No one even brought a cup of tea or a sandwich. She was in the room for, 3 days or something? No one even came in or brought food or anything.
She's a young woman at this point. She needs support.
Yeah.
That's really awful, actually.
And where's the boyfriend even?
Well, he's shagging someone else.
Well, he was. Yeah, he was just cheating on her. And they were sort of together 5 years. So anyway, yeah. And then at some point, right, when they're still supposed to be together, Freddie Mercury's in their lives.
Yeah.
That's really nice. So he's around at their house at parties. She's got a lot of gay friends, actually. That comes up a lot. She's around the house because her dad is on the verge of signing Queen. I think like 2 days later, she introduces Freddie Mercury to John Reed, who's currently managing Elton John.
Yeah, we know all about him because we read all about him. Book.
And Freddie phones her up and goes, "Oh, I'm really sorry, but this lovely man you introduced me to, he's going to manage Queen now."
Damn it. But look, anyway, her dad finally gets massive success with ELO, the Electric Light Orchestra, a fantastic band. Wow. So I actually didn't know that he was their manager throughout their glory years.
Yeah, it was as well, because at that point he was just sending them out on tour and recording albums. They had hit after hit after hit with him as manager. So he really became rich at that point. But then later on, right, what he'd been doing is he had this scam, this is Don, where he'd go to United Artists and sell them fake tapes of fake bands that didn't exist, sign the contract and get loads of money for that band.
Wow.
That band didn't even exist. And he did that over and over and over again. I don't know why he kept doing it. This is to this bloke called Artie Mogul, who was the head of United Artists. And then, way later, this bloke, Artie Mogul, was going to take over at United Artists, and Don was part of that deal. And he was really excited about it. And then the next morning, it had all gone through without him. So then he was livid, and then he had to take him to court to extract ELO from that deal, because he wanted to. So he had to pay quite a lot of money to extract ELO. And in revenge for that, they went to bootleggers and released all of the ELO's back catalogue and saturated the market so Don couldn't get any money from them. But because that's two separate things in the book, I went back and went, hang on a minute. The man who did that to him was the man who he'd been flogging off these fake bands to over and over again.
Wow.
So actually, it was a fair fight.
Yeah. It's just so disheartening to know everyone's corrupt.
They're just corrupting on each other. So they rip off the bands, they rip off each other. And who's getting the shit for that?
ELO
are getting no money from any of that.
Wow. But, which is why they have to tour so much.
Yeah, they still tour so much. Because he basically had to keep them working to make any money out of them.
Wow.
They're just pawns in this stupid game.
It's amazing massively world-famous bands get massively ripped off. You'd think they would have some power and control. I don't think they even do now. Do you know that Taylor Swift has re-recorded all of her old albums under her old management?
Oh, that's good.
Because there was some kind of deal.
So they can own them again.
So that she can have control of her work again.
Yeah.
So it is happening now, actually. It's just that people are finding different ways around it.
Yeah.
Shocking.
It's nuts, isn't it?
Yes. Sharon actually starts going to America a lot to look after. So she's worked for her dad for a couple of years, and now he's trusting her to go to America when he can't always go. She's still young, isn't she?
Yeah.
She goes to California in 1976 and she's 22.
Mm.
She first went out to look after Lindsay DePaul.
Mm.
Oh, now Sharon is, she's gone to America. She started signing stuff for her father. She thinks it's because he really trusts her and she's made it into his good books within the business. She doesn't understand at this point, is so that he's clear of everything.
Not just at this point. She doesn't understand forever until she finally cuts him out.
Yeah.
She's doing this for years.
Hey, I tell you what else happens in California. Britt Eklund.
Oh, yeah.
This is a real eye-opener. Now, can you remember back to our very first podcast about Mr. Rod Stewart?
Yeah, we said, wouldn't it be good to hear the woman's side of it?
Wow. So he has all of these blonde beauties who he kind of wines and dines and has a very nice time with them, but then he dumps them all. And I remember you saying in that podcast, wow, all of these women have their own story, but we're not hearing it. We just think Rod Stewart is a playboy or whatever. In Sharon Osbourne's book, she talks about working with Britt Eklund.
She's picking up the pieces, isn't she?
Oh, my God. So she's looking after Britt Eklund, who is trying to launch a singing career. But as she has just split up from Rod Stewart, it was hard going. For the first time in my life, I witnessed someone with a broken heart I saw that beautiful woman turn into an anorexic wreck, get heavily into drugs and lose her hair. I'm not blaming Rod because I don't know what went on, but he did break her heart.
Mm.
That's the answer to your question from our very first podcast. Wow.
Yeah.
Shame on you, Rod. That's the carnage of all of the ex-girlfriends of rock stars who you don't give a second thought to.
Yeah, we did, because she was someone and he was someone, and he treated her like a queen and then tossed her aside, and then all your insecurities say, I was right, I am no one. I am worth nothing.
Yeah.
That's the effect when someone absolutely showers you with so much admiration and then drops you for another one who looks just like you. It's specifically the thing that he was doing.
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's not good, poor Brit.
No.
Although she ended up going out with a stray cat.
Did she?
I mean, one of them.
From the band.
From the band.
I knew you meant that. Anyway, then what happens?
Ozzy. So she meets Ozzy again a few years later.
1979. At that point, they just realised that they'd been robbed, basically. And it had all fallen apart. So they went crawling back to Don saying, actually, can you manage us? And he does.
Yeah, he does.
So they're totally in her life now. Oh, my God. She discovers her dad's having an affair.
Yes.
Which absolutely shattered her, because she obviously had a big hero worship on her dad.
Which is weird. She knows what he's like.
Yeah, by the way, we've skipped over. There's a point where they talk about having a lot of amazing parties at their house in Mayfair. There was a bloke jumped over the wall, tried to gate crash the party, and her dad comes out and kicks the shit out of this bloke, and she joins in. She's 16, and she thinks, oh, as she's kicking this bloke on the ground with her dad, she's thinking, oh, my dad's going to be really impressed that I'm joining in with this.
Yeah.
It's very sad, but it's good that she starts to de-hero her dad, because she really needs to not be him, because he's not a good man. So her realising that he's having an affair, is, I'm glad she did. She was the last to know. She found G-string. This woman had given him a massive concrete monkey.
Oh, my
this
God.
This is in the house in California. So she drags it out onto the front porch, puts the G-string on its head, and then squats over it and shits on its head.
Bizarre.
I mean, at the point where she meets Ozzy, you go, these two belong together, because he shits here and there as well. That they're both as wild as each other and animal as each other, aren't they?
But see, even her dad didn't know what she was like, because when he came home, he said, why did you get the doctor shit on the statue?
Yeah, and the help, goes, no, that was your daughter. Oh, my God. But also, she seems to be able to shit at will.
Yeah, she
does. So it's quite a skill. Yeah. They all do. Yeah. Ozzy's just like passing a shoe in a corridor in the hotel.
Oh, that's disgraceful. She shits
in a shoe. But how can you just shit at will? What are they like?
Because they're full of it.
Blimey.
So she does get the job of taking ELO out on their American tour. And she's only early 20s. But her behaviour, and then like ELO, actually, Jeff Lynne doesn't like her, doesn't want her there.
Yeah.
She thinks, oh, it's because I'm a young woman. But actually, then when she tells you what she used to do, it's like, no, you're a drunk mess.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
She's wrecking hotel rooms. She visits Andy Gibb one night and throws up over his record collection.
Do you know what? There's nothing she did that isn't in every other rock biography. But she's the only woman we've read so far that's behaving like this.
Yeah.
There's just no women in this world that do this. But everyone behaves the same as this.
She's management. She should be behaving impeccably.
All of the management. Yeah, I know what you're saying. If I admire her for anything, it's being a woman and being as strong as a man in this industry.
I love that.
I don't admire the men, so I don't, you know what I mean?
I think it's different. And when I hear about her kicking a man in the balls, if that was another man, I think, oh, come on. Because that's a woman in a male-dominated industry. Kind of think good for her, actually.
And there's one point where someone's trying to rip her off and she headbutts him and then knees him in the balls, and he calls the police, and the police get there, and she's quite short.
Yes.
Yeah, she looks like a housewife before she lost all that weight as well. This woman's abused me, and the police laughed.
Yeah, of course.
But she really bloody did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't doubt
it. Yeah, we don't doubt it, but...
Yeah. So, 1979, and they get Black Sabbath come back, because the Meehans have ripped them off so badly to the point where the whole thing isn't really sorted out for 20 years.
Yeah.
They are in massive debt, and they go back to Don Arden and say, you know, can you manage us? And he does.
Mm. And at that point, Ozzy's got a wife, three kids. He's an alcoholic and a drug addict. And it's a great time to start an affair with that man, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Shall I tell you what made me really sad about this book?
Yeah.
Is that Black Sabbath used to bully Ozzy.
I know.
Oh, it made me feel awful that Sharon says he's so sweet and lovely, but the band, he was the butt of the joke, and anything that went wrong at any time, it was always Ozzy's fault.
And it always was. And he said they were at school together.
Yeah.
And they bullied him then. They were the school bullies.
Yeah, the main bully ended up in the band with yeah. Ozzy and can just continue to fucking bully
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah.
Horrible. Yeah, I'm so right. glad he got away.
Yeah, I am.
So Black Sabbath live in a house very close to Don and Sharon.
Yeah.
And she said every morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, they'd be up all night partying. Ozzy would come up for his breakfast. Sharon doesn't have many female friends, but they have this employee called Rachel, and she's about 50, and she's very motherly. And of course, Sharon's not really had that mother figure. Sharon adores her, and she ends up going on tour with her. But at this point, she's running the household, and she's cooking breakfast. And Ozzy comes up every single morning.
He loves her too.
Because he loves her too. There's a sense of family up there. And I think yeah, because really nice. He's so bullied by the band, I think he just loves her. He's gravitating towards Sharon and Rachel. Mm-hmm. I kind of get how the Sharon and Ozzy thing is already beginning to happen, in spite of the fact that he is married and does have three kids.
I know. But yeah, Sharon eventually gets him away from the band. She installs basically another singer with Black Sabbath and then puts a band together for Ozzy.
Well, Black Sabbath come to Don and say, we want Ozzy out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite a bold request, really,
yeah.
when your lead singer is Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah,
and he
right.
is the face of the band. Who do they think they are? They think they can seriously carry on without
yeah,
him.
I guess because Sharon's got to know him. She knows it's for the best. And actually, she gets in that singer and she thinks it won't last. They'll realise how much they need Ozzy, but yeah. they don't. They do all right. So.
Yeah.
But when she puts this band together for Ozzy, one of them's this bloke called Randy.
Randy Rose.
Yeah, yeah. He's a guitar player who just becomes there's a total soulmate to Ozzy, a lovely, gentle person who says things like, oh, right, well, you know, if you don't want it in this key, let's put it in this key because that'll be better for your voice.
Yes, that's
and the other
the
bloke
thing.
Used
yes.
to push him to sing out of yeah, his range amazing. And just bullying him musically.
Yeah.
And they were just lovely musically together, these people.
Oh, so much better.
So it's really nice to know. So
yeah, and he was young as well, Randy. He was like a kid, really. Yeah.
Oh.
I think Ozzy's around 30 at this point. Randy must have been about 20.
Oh.
But they really connected. He's so musically gifted, but you're right. He worked with
yeah,
Ozzy
and they wrote songs
yeah.
together really well and stuff. It's really nice. Okay, so at this point, they go to America to meet CBS publicity department. It's a big meeting for them to see if they could promote them. He's taken two doves. This is legendary. He's taken two doves to release as a sort of sign of peace. But they're talking so patronisingly. He just sits on this woman's lap, gets this dove out of his pocket, bites his head off. The body's flopping around on the table and he says, fuck you. Christ, and everyone's screaming and there's blood everywhere. So they were like, oh, we're not touching
oh,
this band.
Yeah.
We are not touching this band. But they happen to have already released Crazy Train and it goes straight to number one because the story got out. So they're like, actually, we'll manage them.
Yeah, it's extra. I didn't know that. I know about the bat thing, which has become legendary. But I didn't know about these doves.
I did, but I'd never put it all into order or into a context.
Sharon says that Ozzy worked in a slaughterhouse when he was 15
yeah,
and killed about 50 cows and sheep every
500,
day.
I thought,
yeah.
a day.
Yeah.
So to him, death of animals is nothing, yeah. and I can respect that.
You can respect it?
I can, actually, because at least it's honest.
Okay.
People eat meat, but the people
yeah,
who kill
right.
it have more...
Oh, I think
about
I
life
think
and death, you know?
One thing, I think people who work in abattoirs and slaughterhouses need to have counselling, actually.
Yeah, that's quite true. Yeah, okay, let's not get into that.
Ozzy Osbourne said about counselling. So Sharon and Ozzy, around the time of the Reading Festival, which was his first outing with his new band, so she puts this band around him, but they do a few warm-up gigs. They're supposed to headline Reading, and it doesn't happen. Reading, actually, she finds them Slade at the last minute in 1980.
Yes.
And that's why Slade had that massive revival
yeah,
at the beginning of the 80s.
They nailed it.
Of course they nailed
it's
it.
Good,
they're brilliant.
It?
But it's around
more
this
Birmingham
time.
Legends, so I must throw that in.
It's around this time that Sharon and Ozzy might end up in bed together for the first time.
Yes.
She thinks it's a one-night stand because he's married with three
kids. She thinks it's a terrible idea for ages, because it is. Mm-hmm. It kind of is.
Of course. But also they're working together.
Yeah, I know that
She's
as well.
She's his manager.
Yeah, she really shouldn't have done that.
So look, they had this tour and this promotional schedule.
Mm.
And then, of course, that comes to an end. It's for his first solo album called The Blizzard of Oz. It was a hit.
Great Ozzy, name, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's brilliant.
And it's his first solo album. It's a massive hit. Ozzy's big news as a solo artist. Yeah. Then, as these things do, you know, the promotional tour ends. He's going home to his family.
Yeah.
Sharon goes home and she just feels really
end
devastated.
End of the romance. But he'd gone home saying he was going to tell his wife he was going to leave her. He tells his wife and she has a different idea.
Yeah.
So the next thing you know is he's told Don, Sharon has to be off the tour. So his wife's not having it. I can't see her anymore.
And David, the brother, has to come and be my manager.
Yeah. But of course, she's absolutely on top of all of that job and knows how it ticks. So it doesn't work without her anymore.
Yeah. And then she said after that formal agreement with Don and her brother, Ozzy phones her back up. He says the relationship is over, but I want you to come back as the manager. And she said yes. Although she does say both of us know it wasn't over. He was
absolutely
talking shit.
It was what his wife was saying, obviously.
I honestly think he was trying to do the right thing by his wife. And it's a messy situation.
Well, yeah.
I'm not excusing any adulterers.
By the way, I looked her up and pictures of them together. My gosh, she's so lovely. She looks
really
so lovely. And just so nice. But then Sharon describes her when she comes to a gig as she's got this stony face and she looks miserable.
Well,
of course she does, because she realises Ozzy's shagging about.
Yeah.
Of course she's miserable. She can see she's losing him because he's taking off and he's been away in California and their relationship's really hard, and it's not very fair of her to say anything negative about his wife, I don't think.
But Sharon Osbourne's not a nice person. Why would she say something
well,
nice
she
about
isn't
Ozzy's
really.
Ex-wife?
She wouldn't.
Yeah.
She wouldn't be lovely and understanding. She's brought up to be hard as nails.
Mm-hmm. So they go back out on another tour and the shows are amazing. And actually Sharon credits her beginnings with that whole vaudeville background. Because she says it doesn't matter what happens, you get on stage and you give a bloody good show.
Yeah.
So she's introducing more theatrics and stuff into the stage show so that the audience are really being entertained.
Yeah, they are. By the way, that bat incident, somebody's thrown this bat onto the stage. It must have been doped or something, because apparently Ozzy picked it up, but he's off his head anyway, and thought it was plastic.
Yeah.
So he bit the head off and suddenly his blood all down his face. I've always known that story, but it never occurred to me that they're full of rabies and disease, because that's all Sharon thought. Oh my God, we've got to go and get him jabbed up immediately. Never even occurred to me that.
Do you know what never occurred?
What?
No, sorry. My one takeaway from that whole thing.
Yeah.
How did they take a bat into the concert?
That's what I mean. I guess they weren't checking pockets back then, you know. Security.
No, but where would you find a bat?
That's what I mean. It must have been doped up. I don't bloody know, but it's all that goth and horror world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good point, though. Yeah.
So, he didn't know it was a real bat.
Okay, we've got to talk about that bloody plane crashing incident.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, how nuts was that when you read that? Did that absolutely pickle your brain?
Can I be really honest about this chapter? When she started describing, she was asleep on the tour bus and she heard a crash. It was bent. She stumbled outside. There was smoke and people
You're
were screaming.
You're as confused as she must have been, aren't
I
you?
Thought she was telling us about a dream, and I got so angry. I flicked through the next few pages thinking, don't waste my time telling me about your dream. Your
life
is exciting, right? And then as the dream went on for 7 or 8 pages, I went onto the internet.
Oh my God.
And I Googled Ozzy Osbourne, Sharon Osbourne plane crash.
And then you read about it on
Fucking hell, it actually happened.
All right, let's talk about it in real time. I actually thought it was a genius piece of writing, because she describes it as she witnessed it, which is complete confusion.
Yeah.
So she's fast asleep in the bed. There's a double bed at the very back of the tour bus. She's fast asleep. Ozzy had actually joined her for once at 6 a.m. and gone to bed as well. And he never did that. Otherwise, he wouldn't have survived. Suddenly, there's a crash. There's smoke. There's fire. The whole bus is bent in half. Ozzy's yelling, get out, get out. Because, of course, the bus might explode. They get out.
They can smell fuel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They managed to get out. And they can see bits of aeroplane. Well, they're in a bus.
Yeah.
How could there be bits of aeroplane? It's so confusing. And then she runs to this hut and there's a man on the phone. She's trying to say, get off the phone. But you get how confused she was, because she describes it as she came across it. Then she looks across and sees a colonial house with white columns, and it's on fire, and there's a man obviously inside it. It's totally dreamlike. So then Ozzy goes, there's a man in there, I've got to get him out. And he grabs a fire extinguisher and he's running towards the house. She's going, Ozzy, no. And it turns out, unbelievably, that that man's deaf. And he didn't know it, that part of his house was on fire, because he couldn't see it. And all he knows is this insane rocker dude running at him, yelling what he can't hear with an extinguisher. So that was all going on. And finally she focuses and realises that a small plane has crashed into the bus, and there's body parts all over everywhere. God. Then she starts screaming, where's Randy and where's Rachel? Oh, this is her best friend and assistant and everything to her, mother everything. And Randy, who's Ozzy's best friend and musician and everything. Then she finally pieces together what's happened. You could say that bit, I'm exhausted.
Oh, my God. The bus had stopped because there was a problem with the air conditioning unit. So they stopped at this workshop, which also happened to be an airfield for light aircraft. And the driver of the bus, who was a bit of an idiot by all accounts anyway, because they're all stood around waiting. And so he took one of the light aircraft up for a little.
Yeah, he said, oh, do you want a little jolly? Yeah.
So he took two of them up and it was fine. But he actually thought he'd try and wake the people up on the bus because that's funny. And he was showing off. Anyway, they were a bit scared. Come down. Nothing happened. And then Randy, you lovely young Randy, and Rachel. Rachel was scared of flying. And he assured her, no, look, I won't do what I did the last time. Just come up with me. We'll have a night. And because of that, Randy didn't want to go, but he wanted to take some aerial photographs to show his mom. So they both went up, both being scared of flying. And that fucking idiot started doing tricks and stuff again to try and wake the people up on the bus. Long story short, crashed into the bus, killed all three of them on impact.
It's horrendous. Randy and
Rachel
are
dead.
Yeah. They were absolutely devastated as a couple by both deaths.
She said it took them, well, she actually said they were such a small group of people anyway. There were a couple of other people in the band. She said even to this day, if they bump into each other, there's just a shared sadness that they will never get over.
Yeah.
I mean, they had unquestionably had PTSD after that.
It's
I don't know if they ever really sorted that out. She doesn't say they
experience.
Did.
Yeah.
Did you know this?
No, nothing about it.
Isn't it interesting that we know that Ozzy bit a head off a bat?
Yeah.
But we don't know that this absolutely shocking, traumatic plane crash happened.
Yeah, you're right. I had not a clue.
Yeah, I had no idea of it.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm.
Right, moving on.
Oh, it's horrifying.
It's horrifying. It really is.
Ozzy gets divorced and Ozzy and Sharon get married. In 1982, she was 28 and he was 33.
I want to say it's like happy. It's a happy thing, but it's absolutely horrendous.
Oh, it happens.
The state of him. And then they have three kids. In the way that they were all behaving and what was going on and the drugs and drink and the workload and, oh my God, travelling and, oh, let's throw three kids into this mix.
Yeah. Do you know, they got married a few months after that plane crash.
Yeah.
I think that whole thing made them reevaluate everything. Life is short.
Yeah, and they've got each other and how much they love each other. By the way, talk about her parents being bastards. Where did they fly somewhere to get married? Some island or something?
Yeah.
And their parents, they had all these amazing presents from obviously probably amazing people. And the parents said, we'll fly back with all your wedding presents. When they got back, the parents said, oh, I don't know where the presents are. They were lost in the flight or something. What was that all about?
Well, it turns out they only really went to the wedding so they could sign more papers and stuff.
Because
Sharon was signing everything.
Yes, and in fact, then the next day, the dad and brother took Ozzy out and told him that Sharon's absolutely insane and you can get this wedding annulled if you want. Because she's completely unhinged. The day after. Do it the day before.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it.
It's just so weird that they said you can get the marriage annulled on the grounds of insanity.
Yes.
Which maybe he could have
done. To be fair, that could go either way.
But what are they trying to get out of it?
I have no idea.
It's so weird.
Yeah, and it really scared him.
Oh, my God, and the dog attack.
Oh, my God.
So she's at their mum's house.
Yeah.
And they've got dogs. They've got a Doberman and two Pyrenean Mountain dogs. And they knock Sharon to the ground and basically...
Maul her. They maul her stomach and she's pregnant.
Yeah, she didn't know she was pregnant until they told her at the hospital that she'd lost the baby.
Yeah, and it's not good.
They were so unsympathetic, her parents, about that. Because when they've been in America, they've been living in their dad's property and stuff. When that happened and she lost that baby, her and Ozzy quickly packed a suitcase. They went back to America. They moved out of that house and they cut ties with the family there and
then. Yeah. There's no way you should let that happen to anybody.
Yeah, I just wonder when her mum had that car accident, whether it did seriously change her.
But her dad was nuts anyway. Anyway, these are all gone into the dark side.
Yeah, now. I know. So when they rushed back to America to move out of their dad's house, before her dad knew what they were doing, they also rushed to CBS Records to say, right, cut all ties with my dad. I am now, Sharon is now the sole manager of Ozzy Osbourne. Don't let them have any of the money or anything. They got there just in time because her dad had flown his accountant out to try and get all of the money from the record company.
And after that point, her dad told anyone that would listen that he was going to kill Sharon. And later on, he also said, and you should watch out for your kids. Wow. I'm going to kill your kids.
Wow.
That's just his normal talk, but... bloody hell.
And because all of their dealings have been through their dad's business, they've been living in his houses and stuff, when they cut those ties, they had nothing.
Yeah.
The CBS lent them an advance for an album and they got a hotel for a bit. But
yeah,
they had...
and then they went to Richard Branson and he amazingly bailed them out. He bought the publishing rights for $500,000, which isn't as kind as it sounds. He's got their publishing rights. I mean, he's not an idiot. But then they bought this really nice thatched cottage. And on the day they were moving in, Ozzy thought it'd be nice to light a nice fire in the fireplace and burn the place down.
Yeah, right.
It's just insane though, isn't it? Oh, yeah, this is a great man to have kids with. This is just what?
I mean, he obviously had something.
Oh, no, I know. I know what he's got. I'm really fond of the fellow.
No, but even so, do you know what? She talks about them going to France and Germany to meet the record companies. And he's so... obnoxious.
Oh my god, the German one is the worst.
I mean, that's shocking,
right? He properly takes all his clothes off, does like Nazi marches up and down the table, and actually declares that all Germans are Nazis. This is at a German record company meeting in a restaurant. Then he takes the head of the company's wine glass and puts his balls in it. Then he puts it back down and sits on the bloke's lap and snogs him. And that's the end of that meeting.
Sharon says goodbye, Germany. Goodbye, France. On the plane back to the States, I was ripping up the contracts into fucking confetti. We were supposed to be going to Italy, but I didn't have the stomach for it.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he's
funny,
ruining
his
own
face.
Career.
Yeah, but he doesn't even know what he's doing. He doesn't even remember any of it. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's not long after this. He actually is so messed up on drugs. And he actually comes downstairs and is very serious and says, we've decided you have to die.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, my God, we? And then he proceeds to actually properly try to murder her. He really almost strangles her to death.
Well, she grabs something off the table and hits
her. There's a security alarm. Yeah, and she manages to reach it.
She manages to press a panic button, which sets a deafening alarm off.
And she passes out. And the next time she comes around, Ozzy's not there. The security people have come in, the police, because it's wired straight to the police station. And they go upstairs and find Ozzy upstairs, and he kicks off. And she decides not to press charges after a long time. They send him to sort of rehab police unit, I think, don't they?
Yeah, well, she rationalises. She says if he was just drunk or stoned, then that would be a different thing. But actually, he was so off his head, he was a different person.
Yeah.
And so she decides not to.
No, she says as long as he stays in rehab until he's definitely safe to come out. He's there for 5 months. They visit him all the time. The kids visit him. He's so sorry. He's writing letters. He's happy to go through all of that process for the first time because he's tried rehab a lot before now.
And the doctor says to him when they're leaving, he says, you're young, you're good looking, you're talented and you're wealthy. You will be back here within a year. He was an optimist. Ozzy didn't last 2 hours. They went straight to a cafe afterwards and he had a beer.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, so you're drinking again.
And it just escalates, yeah. She's also committed extreme violence on him. She gashed his head open at one point. She talks about it. She smashed a bowl over his head and it completely cut his head open.
Oh, yeah.
And he refused to go to hospital. So he came and sat outside so everyone could see the blood pouring down him. I mean, they are very violent to each other.
Yeah, she says she threw a bottle of whiskey at his head, at the back of his head, and he charged back through her against the wall and it snapped both of her front teeth off.
I mean, they just beat each other up all the time.
They shouldn't be together.
No, they shouldn't.
They end up having three children together.
God, there's lots of time where she says she's constantly afraid of him coming in. Oh, yeah. Oh, when Kelly was born, he was so happy. He celebrated by shagging the nanny, going home and shagging the nanny. He's like, how can you literally put up with this shit? It's unbelievable. But it's both of them. They're both insane. But, oh, anyway, they do. They do. That's what they do.
I mean, look, they're still together now.
They're still together and they absolutely bloody love each other.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
They really do.
I mean, it clearly works for them. Who are we to judge?
Somehow it sort of does, yes.
There was a point, actually, when Sharon wanted to leave Ozzy, but because she'd separated from her dad and she'd signed everything, all of her dad's debts were on her. She was very careful when she married Ozzy to sign a prenuptial.
Yes.
Not so she couldn't have his money. It's just that he wouldn't get any of her debts.
Yes, that's very good.
But because of that, she didn't have a bank account. She didn't have a credit card. So she actually could not leave Ozzy. Mm. She had three kids and she had no money of her own.
So actually, to be honest, it was only when they started filming their insane lives at home that their fortune kind of turned much better.
So that all came about because this little British independent TV company said, can we follow you like a day in the life of Ozzy Osbourne or whatever? And that hit at the Montreux TV Festival. Yeah. It won a Golden Rose, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And then because of that, MTV came and did Cribs.
Yes. They realised they had gold on their hands.
Well, the episode of Cribs ended up being the most requested one on the channel, which then Sharon Osbourne called up MTV and said, I think we should go to lunch to see how we can work together. Yeah. And they then just hatched out this idea of doing a longer version of the day with Ozzy.
Basically a reality TV show, which was one of the first of its kind, or the first?
I would think so, yeah. So they did three episodes. And before they'd even edited them, they said to Sharon, oh, we've got TV gold here. Let's do six episodes. Yeah. Anyway, that then went to 6 months. And then we noticed it was a massive TV show.
Like The Simpsons on acid, isn't
it? Yeah, it kind of was, actually. And they were very entertaining. Mm. I totally get how it became a massive hit. They were just so naughty.
Yeah.
Also, what's really interesting, she says, when the first episode aired, they went to the beach. And they said people constantly came up to them to talk to them.
Oh, yeah.
And that had never happened before. Again, it's like the Cher effect.
Yeah.
You can already be a massive worldwide pop star, but when you have a TV show in people's front rooms, your fame goes off the charts.
Yes.
And she said that there was a real difference, like before and after the first episode of The Osbournes. And then that happened very quickly. She said they were on the front of magazines. They got invited to the White House. I mean, that's crazy.
And then they got invited to the Queen's Jubilee celebrations. Like, there's Paul McCartney, Phil Collins on drums. Yeah, the best of British. They're finally invited into the inner circle and they've always been on the outside looking in.
Yeah, they become part of rock aristocracy, don't they? I mean, arguably, Ozzy is part of that anyway.
He is, but he never got invited into it.
Yeah.
So it took a reality show to actually get them noticed, really.
Yeah.
Or respected.
Mm-hmm. And the rest is history, as they say.
Beginning of the end, really, isn't it?
Yeah. But, and then Sharon goes, I mean, she gets her own talk show and one of her guests one day is Simon Cowell. And then he says, why don't you come and be a judge on the X Factor? So like every step of the way, her fame is just growing exponentially.
Yeah, exactly.
To the point where she's a household name in England and in America.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and Ozzy had a massive quad bike accident, which I do remember that happening.
Yeah, I remember.
Oh, that was bad. He very nearly died. And actually that really brought an outpouring of love for him.
Yeah.
Which made them realise how loved he was by the British people.
Mm-hmm.
And he just made a duet with Kelly. Took it to number one because I think everyone just wanted to show that they loved him, which is nice.
Do you know the most surprising thing to me towards the end of this book was how Sharon looked after her dad in his later years.
I know, very surprising.
Yeah, because he lost everything and then he started getting really ill and she paid all of his medical bills. Yep. She even visited him. Yep. And this is one thing that does come up quite a lot in these books that we read, and it's something I don't
they
quite
never
understand.
Cut the ties with their evil parents.
Yeah. It's so many of them still look after their horrible parents.
Yeah.
But I'm more surprised at this one than ever because her dad shafted her on more than one occasion, tried to ruin her on numerous occasions.
To kill her and her kids. But that was just him.
Oh.
I know. It's very surprising. She even says, I need to explain this. She knows it's nuts.
Yeah.
But it's nice.
It is nice. And there is that kind of weird mafia bond thing. You know, I love you, but I will also stab you in the back, but I will look after you at the same time. It's really odd.
And he did have dementia and he didn't know what he was talking about and he just wasn't a threat and he wasn't the man he was. I can't excuse it. I think they're actually a bunch of villains.
They are.
They're lovable villains. It's like Sopranos or any of those things. You get to know them, so you care about them, but it doesn't stop them being a bunch of crooks.
Yeah, it's like you've said before, like reading these books. I think it was a Janice Dickinson one where you kind of said, you're not going to view people who appear batshit crazy. You will now understand they're like that for a reason.
Yeah, they don't know any different and you have an understanding of them.
And I feel I have an understanding of Sharon Osbourne now.
Yes.
To the point where I don't hate her. Do you know what? I've really tried to rationalise it by saying, okay, it's because of her dad and that's how she was brought up. But do you know what? Lots of people have dads like that and are brought up like that and they actually go the other way and they make sure they're kind to everyone.
Yeah.
She's just become a carbon copy of her dad, really.
In a way. I can't summarise and judge it. It's too complicated. I'll tell you what, I'm going to be referring to this book in my mind every time I think about the music industry. It's the first time I've really had in-depth knowledge from within how bad they are, how much.
Do you think it all is?
Yeah, I can't see why it isn't. Yeah. We've had inklings of it from the actual artists themselves to get it from the inside out.
Manager.
Bloody hell.
I love that she managed to Smashing Pumpkins. I did not
know.
Oh,
yeah, that's true.
And I love that she says that at the beginning, Billy Corgan was just so charismatic.
Yeah, and then he turned into a twat.
She says, Billy Corgan was a dream. He was a complete doll. Then slowly, like an illusionist's trick, he turned into a fucking alien in front of my very eyes. He wasn't even ordinarily horrible. He was one of the meanest, most twisted people I've ever had the misfortune of working with.
Yes, bud.
And then she released a statement. Due to medical reasons, I have to resign as Billy Corgan's manager because he makes me sick.
She's funny.
She is really funny. Yeah. She has a great turn of phrase. Do you know what? If it wasn't for her sitting on those X Factor panels and being unnecessarily obnoxious, I get that's the language of those programs and of the time 15 years ago. No, actually, do you know what? She was horrible to Danny Minogue. She could fuck off.
Yeah, she talks in the book about really laying into somebody and there was a bit of a backlash about it because everyone loved him and she thought she'd ruined her own career. And then she gets invited back because Simon Cowell's a nasty piece of work as well. They're all one and the same.
It's all the currency. It's good for TV.
Yeah, all that.
Yeah. Oh, do you know what? Here's something. If Sharon Osbourne was a really nice person, we'd never have heard of her. We wouldn't be talking about her now.
No, and to survive in this industry, she has to be hardcore. There's no way if you were a nice person, you'd have got anywhere with this bunch of...
reprobates.
That's it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Thrift Shop Biography. We love making this podcast and we're absolutely thrilled that so many of you are already listening. You could really help us out by leaving us a review somewhere, wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you could share us, tell your friends about us or drop some links on social media. We have a Facebook page called Thrift Shop Biography. So make sure you come over there to hear about the episodes first and what else we're up to. Okay, see you next week. And if you're new here, there are loads more episodes now to go and listen in the back catalogue, so make sure you go and enjoy them. Okay, thank you very much.